Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another Press One for Democracy, broadcasting from the banks of the Willamette River in Portland, Oregon. This is your host, Dan Aronson, and today we have yet another very special guest is coming on to speak about the Anti-Corruption Act and his organization, as well as the recent campaign that they've launched. And let's take the temperature about seeing if how the coffee party should be involved in this. That's really what the show is about. Of course, it's a call-in show. I already see callers lined up in queue, so that's great. Nobody wants to hear me yet for an hour and a half, as I always say. So it is a call-in show, and we want to hear from you at 646-929-2495. That would be the number to call in. And when you get into the queue and you want to speak and be heard, press 1, hence the name of the show, Press 1 for Democracy. And the little light will go up on my control board here that will tell me you want to get in on the conversation, and we will bring you in. But first, we have a special guest, Mansur Gidfar. I knew I was going to mess that up. And Mansur Gidfar, the communications director of United Republic, is going to be with us tonight, and I want to give you a little bit on Mansur as well as United Republic, give you a little background information before getting into the actual topic, which is, again, the American Anti-Corruption Act. To give you a little background, I quite enjoyed this bio. It says, Mansur is an ad man gone rogue for the cause. He has previously worked as deputy editor at Upworthy, one of my favorite websites and Facebook pages. The stuff that Upworthy comes up with, I think, is brilliant. Holds a BS in advertising from the University of Colorado. He joined the fight against money in politics to combat the threat corruption represents to his friends, his family, and his country. So that's the little short skinny, and when we bring Mansur in here, I'll ask him to give us a little bit more background. As far as United Republic, United Republic is an organization that has a very interesting mission statement. As you know from listening to the show, if you have before, I always like to look at what an organization's mission statement is, because I think that to me represents your principles. Principles which are unbending, and they're non-negotiable. You know, anybody can give an opinion on something or state a specific issue stance, but when it comes to principle, that's where I believe the rubber meets the road. So when you look at United Public, it says we envision a nation, and then they give four bullet points, the first of which is where the will and concerns of the people aren't drowned out by the financial influence of the few, where politicians devote more time to their constituents than they do to fundraising, where political decisions are made on principle, there's that word again, one of my faves, without the distorting effect of lobbyists, and where individual citizens have access to clear information about their leaders and are empowered to end the imbalance of power in Washington and our state capitals. And they conclude by saying, we believe this vision is achievable and central to the success of the republic. So could not agree more. And again, I think it's always great to run into organizations that have, you know, very similar principles to the coffee party. So tonight we'll be talking about with Mansur about, again, the organization, the campaign, Represent Us. And I posted in the chat room, various website information. So if you're on the chat room, you can click on those websites and go and read about these things. But without further ado, let's bring Mansur in. Good evening, sir, and welcome to Press One for Democracy. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
That's great. You know, I really like that bio. I like the ad man gone rogue. So now, were you a Madison Avenue guy?
I was on that track. I came out of the GU Ad program, and I was doing some art direction, some graphic design, and I actually just threw a weird quirk of basically applying for a job for the hell of it, ended up working with Upworthy instead, and that sort of put me on this activist route, and I just never really looked back.
So that was going to be my next question. So you really got into activism almost by accident. It wasn't like you woke up one day and realized things were falling apart and we had to do something about it, and it was you almost got it by osmosis.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I was one of those people who, I somewhat naively did something I think a lot of people did, which is I voted for Obama in 2008 and thought, hey, you know, the good guys won. I guess I never have to pay attention again. And just by virtue of working at Upworthy and working with very political people, I started to become more and more clued in. And, you know, knowing what I do about the way campaign finance law works, about the way the levels of corruption in Washington, it just, you know, it didn't feel possible for me to not do something about it. Once you know, you can't really turn back.
Yeah, no, I totally hear you. 513, by the way, I see your hand is up and in the queue. We want to get a little bit of the background laid out, a little foundation for the conversation. And so I will come to you as soon as we do that. 954, I see you also in the queue. But what I want to talk about is I want to give you a chance, Matt, sir, and it's really – I'm glad you're an ad guy, because I've been in sales and marketing all my life, so we can kind of sort of talk the same language. Give us the elevator pitch then, if you will, on the American Anti-Corruption Act.
All right. Well, as you can probably gather from the name, our big point is that the government of the United States is corrupt. Full stop, period, no qualification. And we believe that politicians will only act if we force them to, and we have to force them to do that with a bill that would actually fix the problem in its entirety if passed. We don't believe in taking a piecemeal approach. We believe in applying grassroots pressure. And to really push through a legislative fix that is compatible even with a Supreme Court that is not particularly friendly to these kind of reforms. And we really were interested in fixing the entire problem in one go.
Okay, so let's talk about that then specifically, because there were, well, you know, I do a posting on our main Facebook page, I think we had about 45,000 views on it today. And the comments that were left, there were two kind of like, yay, but kind of comments that were repeated several times, right? So a couple of concerns. One was, how do we get this past the current, you know, the Supreme Court? And maybe you could go into a little bit about how and who this bill has been vetted to do just that, and give us some reason to hope.
Yeah, absolutely. So this bill was drafted by, we have a battery of constitutional lawyers and scholars who worked on this. It was primarily drafted by a former Republican Federal Elections Commission chairman by the name of Trevor Potter. Most people probably know him from his work with Stephen Colbert's Super PAC, Americans for a Better Tomorrow, as well as with some consultation from Lawrence Lessig. He's a Harvard Law professor, very well-known advocate in this field, author of Republic Lost and Westerland. And we have been very thorough in going through each individual provision and listing out the precedent cases that make it constitutional. If you go to anticorruptionact.org, there is an entire PDF you can download, actually, that lists out specifically the precedent cases under which the provisions of the Anti-Corruption Act are unconstitutional. But if people have specific concerns, I'm guessing the Super PAC provisions raise eyebrows. I'd be happy to go into detail about those as well.
Okay, well, let's see how the conversation goes. And I know I'm one of those people who thinks they know something about law just because I was raised by a lawyer. But I know enough to know that when it comes to this kind of law, it can get pretty hairy as far as the language is concerned. So on the website, I mean, are there things for, you know, folks that are maybe, you know, novices when it comes to the law? Will we understand it if we go there and read it?
Yeah, we have a whole guide. This is what I was talking about earlier. There's if you go to anticorruptionact.org, we have a whole guide put together that explains the constitutionality and as much English as you can when you're dealing with campaign finance law, but it's specifically designed to address this kind of concern.
Beautiful, beautiful. So the second concern that was raised then was what was the concept that the, you know, I think somebody once said corruption is like rain falling on a sidewalk. You can patch up some of the cracks, but eventually the nature of water is it will seek and find a crack. Do you really believe that you've got all of the cracks cemented up with this bill?
We do. And I mean, I think this might be a good time to get into specifics, because essentially we're addressing four major, you know, areas that are created the corrupt environment we're dealing with today. The first is addressing conflicts of interest. So that's, you know, preventing members of Congress from raising funds from interest they're supposed to be regulating. It's closing the revolving door, making sure that we're not using the Congress of the United States as a farm league for lobbying. It's extending, you know, the existing bans we have on federal contractor donations, their PACs and affiliates, and then there's a whole battery of campaign finance reforms in there. There's a measure for taxpayer vouchers to make the primary funder of elections in the United States the citizens, and not just the select few who can afford a contribution now, as well as transparency reforms, enforcement reforms. We really try to be as thorough as possible in crafting this act, and we believe we've got a good piece of legislation.
Beautiful. That sounds fair. Yeah, you've convinced me. I believe you. I think it's a great cause. There's a lot of people within Coffee Party that do as well. And if you're okay, I thought I'd open up the mic and take
absolutely.
A few calls.
And, you know, real quick, I'd like to say, you know, if people are not convinced by my sales pitch, I would strongly encourage everyone to go to anticorruptionact.org. We have the full text of the act online. And if people would like to pick through it, they're more than welcome to. Talking
Excellent.
About his transparency as much as we do, we figured we'd be transparent.
That makes total sense. So just so you know, callers on hold, 513-954, then 404 is the order we'll be going in. So 513, is this Laura?
It is Dan.
Yay, how you doing, Miss Laura? How are things going?
They're gone.
Okay. Mansur, this is Laura, one of our regular callers, lives in Cincinnati. And,
it's nice to meet you, Laura.
Can I ask you a small favor, Dan? When
anything
you send
for you.
An email blast out, put the time next to the call-in number.
Put the time
for
next to
the... For those of us forgetful or wonder if you changed the time.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You got it.
Because I'm not always able to call in all the time, because I'm going to get more active with IWG.
Oh, great! That's beautiful. That's one of our Mansur. That's one of our work groups. That our it's internet and what remind me what IWG stands for, Laura?
We basically do any of the tech stuff.
Internet work group? Is that the
work group?
Okay, beautiful. Do you have a question for Mansur about the Anti-Corruption Act or anything else?
You know, well, wait a second. The first thing is you put a question in your email blast, so the first thing is always going to be I'm going to answer that question. And the answer is, as the country singer said, hell yeah.
Okay, so that question for everybody listening, I'm sure you read it. It was, should the Coffee Party sign on to the to the American Anti-Corruption Act? Okay, good. Well, we have one vote in the yes column to go along with about 30 that were posted on Facebook. So beautiful. We're off to a good start. Do you have any specific questions about the act?
Yeah. Anytime that a group of people can combine with other groups for a common cause, that's a good thing in my book. Yeah, I just kind of sort of have one general question. Why is it lawyers say things like, the law isn't always just, it's just the law? Because when they put you on the bench as a justice, then isn't it all supposed to be about justice and not about just the law? I mean, I know that's kind of a vague, generalized question, but it's a fair one, isn't it?
Every question is a fair one, as long as it's asked respectfully. I don't know, Mansoor, do you want to take a swing at that one?
I mean, I think the thing we've run up against with, you know, respect to the current judicial environment is that just, you know, the interpretations have varied so wildly, it's, you know, always, it seems to have been to the detriment of the country at late. I think a large aspect of that is particularly on the Supreme Court. There is not a great, I mean, for lack of a better way of saying this, there is, does not seem to be a terribly good understanding of how elections in this country work. And the idea that, you know, particularly when you look at the Citizens United ruling, it's a popular punching bag with good reason. You know, this idea that the coordination limits are being enforced, this idea that the fact that they're independent expenditures will not create corruption or the appearance of corruption, you know, at a certain point, I think it can be that, particularly with wonkier issues like this, you know, sometimes those on the bench are not entirely aware of the situation on the ground. That said, the onus is then on us as citizens to work with the, you know, judicial environment we're given and do our level best to address things ourselves. And we have the good fortune to live in a country that allows us to do that, so I say we get doing.
You think that everything has gotten so down to so technical and so many details that we've kind of lost our common sense, kind of like you can't see the forest through all the trees sort of thing?
I think it feels like an uphill battle for sure, but I also think that most things worth fighting for do.
Yeah, I would only add to that, Laura, that yeah, I mean, it really does come down to the fact that, and especially when you're talking about constitutional law, it's how do you interpret the Constitution? I mean, everybody's got their own opinion, right, as to what, you know, it's almost as if some people speak as if they have some direct Ouija board line to the founders because they're always saying, oh, the founders meant this and the founders said that. I don't necessarily trust those guys, but it's gray. The law is a gray. It's gray, many shades of gray, and it's run by people. And remember, people are fallible, right?
Yeah,
so people make mistakes. And so when you put those two things together, are you always going to get justice? And hey, isn't justice, is that written in stone somewhere? Or do different people have different ideas of what justice is? So
yeah. Well,
it would be nice to think that it would just come down to common sense. That would be nice. But
yeah,
that's not the law.
Yeah, well, sometimes some ideas, justice is what gives me the better end of the deal.
Well, exactly. Justice for whom?
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we have, right? So what we have in the country is justice for people that can afford it. That's I think, a popular cynical sentiment in this country now. And that's what we're fighting against, right?
Yeah, you know what makes me sad, Dan, is that a lot of people say no matter what you do, somebody's going to get hurt. And they think that if anybody's going to get hurt, then hurt the person who's already hurting, because then what difference does it make? They're already hurting anyway, so who cares? So, of course, that means the most vulnerable and the poorest. Thanks, Dan.
I mean, the only thing I would add to all this is that I would, you know, times being what they are, it's easy to get cynical, and I would just say I don't think there's any particular value in cynicism. That's, you know, it's not a productive avenue, and I would encourage people, really, if you feel passionate about it, get involved. I mean, it's the best thing we can do, and it's the only way we can accomplish any kind of change.
I think cynicism comes about as it's kind of like a shield. If you hurt, then you put up the shield of cynicism to protect yourself from any further pain. I think it's a coping mechanism that isn't very good, but that's all it is.
Well, yeah, what's always worked for me, Laura, is turning cynicism into anger, because anger is something that I can point at and do something with. Cynicism,
well,
you get kind of drowned in it, right?
Yeah, but if you express your anger inappropriately, Dan, then it gets you into trouble.
It's energy nonetheless, and it can be channeled for good.
That's why we're buddies, Dan.
Absolutely, Laura. Hey, thanks for calling. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan.
Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I talk about, Mansur, on the show a lot is, to my regular listeners, this is the broken record part of the show. And what it is it's the disenfranchised, the huge number of people who have become disenfranchised in the system, whether it's young people saying, oh, it's all run by a bunch of white old men, what's the point? Or whether it's somebody that says, like you, I voted for the guy that I thought was going to change everything, and look, he's done some good, but, you know, really, he's really not gotten very far because of the system or whatever you want to blame it on. So, you know, in the last election, we had somewhere between 80 and 90 million people that just didn't vote, eligible voters that could have voted that just said, forget it, I'm not going to bother. Which,
yeah.
As I like to point
and
out,
I mean,
if those people had all walked into the voting booths and done what people used to do in the days of old, which was to write in Mickey Mouse, we'd be living in the United States of Disney right now.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I think part of that, I can only speak to my experience and what I did with, you know, getting a result that I thought would take care of everything and disengaging is that, you know, that's the price you pay for tuning things out. I mean, the only way we've moved forward as a country is when people are willing to take a stand and fight for it. And I think that's, you know, one of the bigger lessons I've learned in my life. And I also really just, you know, to bring things back to money and politics, I think the disenfranchisement point is an excellent one to bring up. Because that, to me, is one of the most pressing reasons we need to address the issue of money in politics, is one of the most, you know, outlandish and cartoonish arguments apologists for corruption use is, well, you can't regulate political contributions. You can't touch money in politics because it'll have a chilling effect because people will be afraid to participate. And I think they've got it backwards. I think we're talking about a chilling effect going in the other direction. Having people look at numbers that say, you know, only 0.26% of Americans gave more than $200 to a congressional campaign. Only 0.01% gave more than $10,000. And when you have a system where it's very clear that our elected leaders are responding to their donors, that is a protected manner of speech, donating money, that's the form of speech our government responds to, it can get discouraging. And that's why within the Anti-Corruption Act, we have a provision for every single taxpayer in this country to get a $100 tax voucher that would then give them the ability to donate to campaigns. Because the solution, if the courts aren't going to let us get money out of politics, is to regulate the amount of money that the large interests can contribute and then make it so that everyday citizens can just outbid them.
Yep, no, I love it. That is a great plan, and it's definitely worth shooting for. So, but that's just my opinion. Let's find out what other folks think. 954. If I was to guess, and I like to guess, I would say that this is Neil from Fort Lauderdale.
How did you guess?
Oh, Neil, I don't know. I guess I should go out and play the lottery tonight because I think
you should play some Powerball.
That's it.
How
you doing, Neil?
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm just, the thing that really bothers me, I'm all for this and I'm not trying to be a cynic, but with all the systematic dark money from the Kochs and Pope and everybody that's going in, this would be filibustered in a second by the Republicans. I mean, it's a great idea on paper, but the way that our system is, it's all about dark money. I mean, right now, the Kochs are trying to get 50,000 people thrown off the voting rolls in Virginia. As we're speaking, they're actively trying to stop any form of democracy. They're just basically And the plutocracy is frightening. I mean, I this is fantastic. This is the way it should be. This should be on the books. But it's so ingrained, the corruption has become the norm. That big money, it's only what they want. They want lower wages. They want to get rid of overtime. They want to take the country backward 80 years. They want to get rid of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. This is their design, and they have the money, and they're winning. And this, like I said, this is wonderful. I wish this could happen, but how do you get by all this dystopic force that is plaguing our country and our democracy at this point?
That's a great question. And I'm glad you brought this up, because I think a lot of times with, you know, these big grand, well, wouldn't it be nice if sounding proposals, it's hard to see how you get from where we are now, the passage. The one thing we've seen consistently is that the only thing that can beat out money in politics is smart, organized application of grassroots activists. And we have seen this executed very well, and, you know, given what you just told me, this might not be the ideal role model for you, but we've seen this executed very, very well by the Tea Party. The Tea Party has been able to turn out tons of grassroots activists in the primary, and they've been able to mobilize people. So even when you have huge dark money organizations, huge outside spending groups, these independent expenditure committees, super PACs, 501c4s rolling in with their dark money, it's still the usurper candidate can still come in and win. And this is a big part of our push for the Anti-Corruption Act. It starts with something we're calling Project 435, which is where we get every single member of Congress on the record for or against the Anti-Corruption Act. And if they're for the act, we will label them as anti-corrupt, and their lives will be merry and wonderful. And if they are against the act, they will be labeled as condoning a culture of corruption that is tearing our country apart. And Democrat, Republican, Independent, it does not matter. We will come after them in the primaries, and we will unseat them until we get someone who will. And this is not an overnight fix, obviously. But this is the kind of long-term grassroots fight we have to be prepared to engage in if we want any shot at turning back the things you said you were worried about.
Yeah, it really does worry me, because I hear these people talk, and I read a lot, and it's like, if you look at the agenda of the Koch brothers and other people, not just the Koch brothers, but people like them, it's insidious. I mean, they want to get rid of all environmental protection. They want to take the civil rights movement backward 50 years, the women's movement backward. They want to take privacy away from people. Our Constitution is hanging on a thread as we speak. Freedom of speech, the Fourth Amendment, everything is really, it's frightening. It's really, I as a citizen, as a person, yes, I am progressive, but I'm more American. I believe in America. I believe in good jobs. I believe people respecting each other. I believe, you know, this country is just angry, and there's no productivity. I watched it, like, what's going on in Washington right now. They want to shut the government down. To me, that's treason, and they seem very, very proud of it. And I've never seen this before, and I've been into politics since probably the early 80s, and I've never have seen this much un-American activity, unpatriotic activity in my life.
Well, a couple things there. Just really quickly, I'd like to encourage anyone who is feeling very cynical about, because, you know, all the issues you're mentioning, the common denominator here is money. It is the linchpin of every major issue facing this country today. And anyone who is discouraged about the prospect of fighting against such a well-financed opponent, I would really encourage you to take a look back at the history of this country, take a look back at what Theodore Roosevelt and the birth of the progressive movement managed to accomplish in the Gilded Age, in the time of robber barons, in one of the only times in our country's history where levels of corruption were comparable, and they got out of it without the internet. They got out of it without the political experience, without the organizing capacity, without all of everything we've learned as a country since then on their side. You know, I mean, I would say it's a tough goal, but it's not an insurmountable one.
Yeah, and Neil, keep in mind, I mean, there's some positive factors that you can take away from this.
For instance, right after the Citizens United decision was handed down, numbers were running about 80%. It was 80% of people, of the American citizens poll, were against it, the decision, did not agree with it, and 72% were calling for something exactly like this, a legislative solution to turn back the court's ruling. So it's not that people don't want to do this. The vast majority of Americans want something like this. We just haven't figured out how to coalesce into a group and drown out the moneyed interest. And that's what we're trying to do.
And I would also say, just piggybacking off of that same poll, I think Americans, even with the ones you would think you have the most vehement disagreements with, in that exact same poll, 76% of Republicans polled said they were against the Citizens United ruling. In our rallies, we draw Occupy activists and Tea Party activists in equal measure, because this is the one thing, one of the only issues that Americans of every political stripe can coalesce around, and that's what it's going to take if we want to push this back.
Exactly. Neil, thanks very much for your call. We've got a bunch of people in queue. I got to move on. Any final thoughts?
No, thank you very much for letting me speak.
Always a pleasure, Neil. Thanks. So before I get to the next caller, and I know who it is, Mr. Rodrigo, you'll be next. But before I get to Bobby, I wanted to ask you, I couldn't help but notice on the anti-corruption site, or the Represent Us site, that the Tea Party Patriots have signed on to this. Did I see that right?
I think what you were looking at was the head of the DC Tea Party Patriots.
That's it.
We had an event called the K Street 5K. The rationale behind that being the only way to get Congress's attention is with money, so we literally put on giant money suits and ran from K Street to the Capitol. And the DC Tea Party Patriots were kind enough to join us in that. A lot of people on the progressive side of things find this pretty surprising, and I think you'll find that progressives have a lot more in common with the Tea Party than you might think, which I realize, might sound insane on its face, but these are people, there is nobody in this country who is okay with crony capitalism. And while we may have radically different visions, as Americans, we all have radically different visions for what this country should be, but whether you want a big government or a small government, everyone came in on the same page with the idea that that government, whatever its size, whatever its function, whatever its responsibility, shouldn't be a corrupt one. And I think another thing that makes our movement appealing to Tea Partiers as well as progressives is that, they understand that if they truly want a small government, they're never going to get there as long as the interests stand to make billions and billions of dollars off of the government being enormous continue to be able to drown out their voices. We as an organization, we don't really have a position on any issue other than the ways to get money out of politics. And, as long as people are on board with that cause, we'll welcome them with open arms.
Yeah, and that's the logic and reason that we need desperately to overcome the emotional, battleground that we've set up here, or that's been set up, whether we set it up, whether it was set up by the 1% media because it makes for good, television, and newspaper print to have people fighting. That seems to be better. So whatever it is, you're right. You may have hit on the way to unite us. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the thing is that, Americans are exhausted. We're tired of partisanship. We're tired of fighting each other, and it makes no kind of sense, if nothing else, like a Congress, for a perfect example of how it makes no kind of sense to focus on the things we disagree on when there are so many things that regular people do agree on. And there's the other very important thing, I think, about the money in politics movement. In a strange sort of way, we the people have to lead by example and show the government of this country that we're capable of working together like adults. What a concept.
I have a question for you, gentlemen, since you unmuted me.
I did on you. Is this Mr. Rodrigo, or is this?
I am the one angry Jew.
Oh, the one angry. I thought that was you.
Yeah. Well, tell me. Here's what I'm trying to figure out. How do I tell the difference between the Coffee Party and the Democrats? Because I'm not seeing much of a difference. So
okay,
are you just Democrats with a different mask on? What are you?
So let me answer that. So what we are is, well, I'll tell you what our state of principles are. Our state of principles demand that we're a big tent organization, that we welcome everybody in. That is the heart of transpartisanship. Has it worked out that way? No. Why? Well, I think the most obvious point that can be made as to why it's worked out so that we are so Democratic/liberal/progressive heavy as far as membership is concerned, and therefore the voice, is that Annabelle Park, when she made a comment, right, they started this whole thing, she says, we don't need another Tea Party, we need a Coffee Party. So certain people took that to believe that we were the anti-Tea Party party, which of course is not true. She was not happy with the way they were comporting themselves, and that's what she was basically attacking us. You know, we need to be able to, you know, not people that draw lines in the sands and say, I'm, you know, that's it and forget it. And if you don't believe me, then or believe what I believe in, then just go away. I don't even want to talk to you. She said, no, we need to sit down and be able to talk to each other. And so it's we're working to turn that internally back to what it was supposed to be. So that is what we're attempting to do, and I think we're getting there. And I will tell you this.
But everything I hear when I listen to you guys, I hear Democrat.
Well, you hear people espousing their philosophies, which is
I hear people attacking, the Koch brothers. Meanwhile, when I hear you attack the Koch brothers, I think, well, doesn't George Soros do the same thing? Doesn't George Soros play the same games with his money? But yet I never hear anybody mention that. I always hear attacking the right, but nevertheless.
You don't listen to the show often enough.
I do listen to the show.
I'm always attacking both parties.
The guest that you have on right now, what did he say? He said, Obama, it sounded to me like he was telling me Obama hasn't had a chance to do all the good that's in his heart. Meanwhile, black unemployment is at an ultra high. I don't even think it's been higher ever, has it?
Unemployment?
Unemployment. Black unemployment.
Unemployment was approaching.
We're not even coughing.
20%. It has been. But listen, I don't want to defend Mansour, but that's not what he said. That's not what he said at all.
If I may just interject at the risk of sounding like I'm trying to crowbar my own agenda in here, may I just point out that I'm noticing the common denominator earlier argument was money. In that it sounds like a lot of callers who call into the Coffee Party show are not particularly pleased with the Koch brothers using their money to wield their influence.
But why aren't they
like the current caller is not particularly pleased with what Soros
why aren't they equally
displeased? Hold on. Angry. Let the man speak, please.
It sounds like our angry caller friend is not particularly pleased with the way Jonathan Soros is wielding his money. And it seems to me like the theme developing here is that people have a problem with, especially times being what they are, folks who have a great deal of money to spare get a disproportionate voice in our political system. And to me, it's not productive to sit here and shout about things that there's clearly not a lot of common ground on when there's so much we agree on. To me, that does not seem like a productive use of time, and it doesn't seem like something that's going to get us very far as a country.
I just listened to you say nothing about the left. In other words, you can't say that what Soros does is wrong is equally as what
I absolutely can say that. Oh, God. Here, let me
Then please say it.
Barack Obama has been no friend at all to the anti-corruption movement. And I can say that definitively. And he was elected on promises of enacting stronger campaign finance regulations. No lobbyist will set foot in my White House, and we've seen exemption after exemption. We've seen countless officials from the administration go straight through the revolving door to lucrative careers as lobbyists,
we've
and this is the whole purpose of our movement, is that the money in politics has fundamentally corrupted both major political parties. This is not a question of Democrats or Republicans or right versus left. This is a question of who is corrupt and who isn't. And right now there aren't enough politicians
well,
in the
can
who
you name on one hand
any.
The ones who aren't corrupt? Because I can't count more than one hand of non-corrupt.
You know, I surely can't.
I like my two senators from Oregon. I believe that Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley are on the up and up. I love them. They're very popular. The Democrats should be drafting right now, this very second, a ticket that has Ron Wyden at the top. I can just tell you that right now. But you're right. You know, we're gonna talk in a second here to Bobby Rodrigo, and he's been trying to put together a list of 10 decent human beings in office right now, and he can't get there. So I think
you can count them on two hands. And you may pick out all progressives on the left. And meanwhile, if it were up to me, I think Ron Paul, Rand Paul, any of these guys who are standing for the Constitution. But I think you guys on the left don't like that. You don't like the Constitution.
Well, you're mislabeling me when you call me a leftist. I'm not. I stand exactly.
I'm also curious how many Americans you've met who are actively anti-constitution. Like, you know, I guess I'm having a hard time with that idea. You know, it's an intentionally divisive way of framing things. You know, we're all Americans. We're citizens of this country. Who has stood up and said, I am opposed to the Constitution of the United States? You know, having a different interpretation than someone else.
I would say Barack Hussein Obama has. He has made end runs around it at every time he gets an opportunity.
Okay, I'll tell you what. At this point, I do not want this to turn into a political debate. One Angry Jew, we always appreciate your calls. Thank you for keeping us honest, and thank you for making sure that we're stating that. And it's the reason, again, that the president of this organization, Josh Silver, approached us and said, we'd like you to work with us because you're transpartisan, because you are not a progressive or a conservative. You guys are, you know, a Big Ten organization, and that's exactly why we are seriously, seriously considering getting very involved in their 435 project and very involved in the overall push. So I actually feel your anger because I am also the guy who says – I think the analogy I used last week is I said, if you paint one guy as Hitler, then it's real easy for the other guy to be Jeffrey Dahmer and to have everybody think he's okay. So that's my big problem. And so I'm with you, One Angry Jew. I want to call out all corruption wherever it is and forget whether it's blue or whether it's red or anything. Let's just call it all out, and that's what this is all about. Did I get that right? Mansur, did I get that right?
Oh, you did. Sorry, I thought you were talking to him.
I've gone and muted him because
I lost track of things there for a minute there.
He's a little
derailed there, but I would recommend because, you know, as we've just seen, it is tough to get people who have been conditioned by the last, you know, the recent just explosion in political divisiveness is, you know, I would recommend this to any progressive. Hug a libertarian. Talk to a libertarian about the drug war and see how quickly you start agreeing. You know, talk to a Tea Partier about crony capitalism and the way money is spent in this country and the way money is spent to subsidize our money, your tax dollars, my tax dollars, Republican and Democratic tax dollars are spent to subsidize already profitable corporations. See how quickly you start agreeing. I mean, I can't urge people to do this strongly enough.
Oh, no, I totally agree. I had a show on a couple months ago where I actually highlighted six different issues where, when polled, the vast majority, not just the majority, not a 51 or 52%, but 65% plus, so two-thirds of the country, agreed. Like, for instance, 90% of the country was for background checks on guns. You know, when 90% of the people in this country agree on anything, shouldn't people in Washington listen to them and actually act on it?
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
That, it would be. So thank you for your efforts.
I mean, and that's the other thing I say to people who are cynical about our goals. We are not asking for much. And the fact that it seems like, you know, we're asking for, you know, the fact that people sometimes react to this idea like it's some big pie-in-the-sky goal. I mean, we're just saying that this ostensibly democratic government should represent the people who elected it. This is not like wild, crazy, utopian fantasy times. We're just asking for the government that we deserve.
Absolutely. And I think it goes back to the fact that the people have been beat down enough to become either cynical or just disenfranchised and disengaged. And yeah, we but you look at the math, when you look at the polling data, it says vast majority of Americans want this. So let's give it to them. So,
you know, that's why we fight. I mean, we get beat back down, but we're Americans. We get up again.
Exactly. I'm going to bring in Bobby Rodrigo. He's a friend of the show, great friend of the show, and a great political activist in his own right. Bobby, your mic is open. How are you this evening?
I'm excellent. How is everybody this evening?
Oh, I'm doing good.
Can you? I've actually, I guess I won't be the cynical caller. I'll also get on my bully pulpit a little bit. But I've known about your organization and been a part of it via the internet and what you call it, the what is the phrase you use, a citizen activist, but not activist. But anyway, I signed up to your website because I actually met your organization, and it might have been you, before last year's election on Middle Ground, Coffee Party Radio. And as the show
you know, I don't know if it was me you met. I actually joined up pretty recently, but sorry, go ahead.
No, but and I didn't recognize your voice or your style, so I didn't think it was, but I actually been involved in this and totally support it. It's an excellent idea. I do want to ask you a question about activism, but I wanted to say a couple of things just that are relevant. Number one is Coffee Party Radio is truly transpartisan, and just to make that point to anybody who calls in about understanding that the show or the movement is possibly progressive, let me just say this. I participate in this in the Coffee Party extensively, as do the other members. The board and a whole host of other people, and we interact with each other a lot. Not so much lately because of busyness in the summer and stuff, but we do interact with each other a lot. And I assure everybody that we are more based upon facts, and sometimes the facts are partisan, unfortunately. You know, but most of the time they're not. They're more in tune to what this act is about. There's no question about that. You know, I point out that the last caller mentioned Rand Paul. I have a nickname for Rand Paul. It's Trick Liberty, because he is not the libertarian that everybody believes he is. All you got to do is see where he hangs out and who he supports. I also have no regard for Nancy Pelosi. She is the best fundraiser, money person that Washington may have ever seen in the history of Washington. She's an amazing person around money.
Fun number on Nancy Pelosi. I believe it was in 2010 fundraising cycle, Nancy Pelosi attended more than one fundraiser a day, every day for an entire year, and
that
includes weekends. So you have to wonder where the governing is supposed to happen in all of that.
And this is from somebody up until 2010 that was Speaker of the House, but 2011. And then, of course, the person who's pretty close to her in that ability is our present Speaker of the House, John Boehner. So I, as everybody knows on my participation in this show, I don't believe in the party system anymore at all. The words Democrat and Republicans or any party are listed in the United States Constitution. And the debates, the presidential debates, are corporate-owned. You cannot even get people involved in the debates who are from whatever other parties. It's absurd where we are with that. And one of the things I haven't been able to do since I've known about your corporation, because I've talked about it I'm involved with the Coffee Party, I'm involved with the Free and Equal Elections Foundation, which also is transpartisan and believes in no parties, and I'm involved with People Against the NDA, which actually we have a wonderful announcement as of today. What you're doing and the common ground is out there, without question. And it is so based on money. Even the issue, when you look at issues that are different, like the I'm involved with the March Against Monsanto, a money issue, even though it's a food justice issue. Monsanto is evil incarnate. And the revolving door in Washington, when you talk about our president, who is one of the first people that he appointed on his cabinet, Tom Daschle. Where does Tom Daschle work up until that appointment? On Lobby Street, where his wife is one of the biggest lobbyists for years and years and years. So it threw out the transparency and the change that he was talking about right from the jump. So that we are deceived constantly. I wanted to ask you, to get back on point on a question for you, is are you familiar with the amendment that is being put before the voters in the state of Arkansas that is pretty much a parallel to the Anti-Corruption Act?
I don't believe I'm familiar with the Arkansas initiative, no.
It is called the REGNAT Populist Campaign Finance and Lobbying Act of 2014. It is already passed through committee. It is on the ballot to be voted on. The money hasn't arrived yet to stop it or to try and stop it. There are three key provisions, and please check this out because you guys should know about each other. I introduced your act to one of the authors of this act on Coffee Party Radio in July, as a matter of fact, because when I was listening to him, it was a commonality there. The three provisions that they have. Is not, the third one, for example, is the gift ban from lobbyists to legislators was modified with three exceptions. They have a gift ban from lobbyists to legislators, and it said anything of value that is readily available to the general public, a member of the General Assembly can take a free sample at Walmart or Riverfest without fear of prosecution. Number two, food or drink available at a planned activity to which a specific governmental body or identifiable group of public servants is invited. So a lobbyist cannot, as has been suggested, select certain members of the General Assembly and invite them. Basically what they're doing is that if you want to lobby somebody, you've got to lobby everybody. You can't go up to one person and give them a soda. You've got to give the entire General Assembly a soda to eliminate some of that. They also put a moratorium on when people can go to work for lobbyists when they're out of government to stop that revolving door. So you guys have many things in common. And they did not attack the federal government in order to avoid the Citizens United part of it when it came to election money. I also wanted to ask you if you are aware that in Alabama, that started in October 1st, Alabama, a law that they passed in May allows for any amount of money to be put into a campaign by corporations. They've removed the limits on it. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not, but I know they have similar laws in Virginia. It's certainly not the first state. And if you look at the Virginia's governor's race, you can see the consequences of that at the state level.
Yes.
But it is, and I mean, if anyone was on the fence about whether or not allowing anyone, but corporations in particular, to donate unlimited amounts of money and inject that into the political process, just see what that does to everyday people's voices. This is the first time, actually, this Virginia governor's election, a great article today in the Washington Post I would recommend people check out. This is the first time in the history of Virginia gubernatorial races that there has been more money coming from outside of Virginia to try and influence their election than from inside. And, that to me says, if the people of the state you live in aren't the ones picking the governor, then what the hell are we doing here?
Yeah, the thing about Alabama, that's also where McCutcheon is from, the guy who's, the oral arguments in McCutcheon versus the FEC, they're suing so it sounds like Alabama – might be the hotbed for corruption. I don't know. But, Bobby, I muted you there because we only have Mansour for another couple minutes. And I wanted, if you could, to get into a little bit of the machinations of the Anti-Corruption Act, and specifically actually a 435 because this is the part where Coffee Party is getting ready to sign on to help. And so if you could like outline the plan and the action itself and the expected result, that would be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we are trying to do is to get every single member of the United States House of Representatives on the record either for or against the Anti-Corruption Act and bring political repercussions accordingly to those who oppose the act. And what we are doing is running it in 10 what we're calling beta districts and then taking those experiences and applying them to the broader movement. We're still enrolling members and we're still looking for potential districts. So I would strongly urge anyone who is at all interested in getting involved to go to Represent Us. That's just represent.us and click on the recruit tab on the upper right side. It'll bring you down to a section that says, I want to do something more. And you can sign up for Project 435. We need volunteers to help us gather signatures, to help us table, to help us draft letters to the editor, to write op-eds. If you're at all interested, I really, urge people to get involved because I do believe that, if we want to enact change, it's going to take more than liking us on Facebook, although please, God, like us on Facebook too.
Yeah, absolutely. And so my understanding is that the goal is to get 1,000 people to sign on from each of the 10 beta districts. Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah.
And then now, do you have people that are going to be doing the contacting of the actual Congress people, or are you looking for people to do that as well?
Well, we're going to have it. All of the interaction with the Congress people is going to come from members of the district. That is the point, representing the people they're supposed to be representing. However, the national office will be providing any kind of support you need in that process, whether that's reviewing the language on the letter you're sending to approach them. Or just talking people through the process will provide an activist toolkit. And really, if people are, kind of squeamish because they've never been involved in politics before, I would say don't let that stop you. We'll be here with you every step of the way.
That sounds great. And have you actually gotten Congress people yet to go on record?
No, we're actually still in the phase of recruitment for 435, so we have not begun to approach Congress people yet, but that's going to be coming soon. So if there were ever a time to get involved, it'd be now.
That's perfect. So, and then one last thing, if you can, help me understand the math behind this. So by my count, if you talk about there's 435 representatives and 100 senators, this is for both. You are going to get both senators and representatives on record, correct?
Eventually. We are starting with the House, though.
Okay. That's where, hence 435 versus 535.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because we had an initiative to do a 535 campaign as well, and I believe right now it's the board is heavily leaning towards, and it looks like the vast majority of our members are in favor of signing on and becoming an integral part of the 435 project. So I look forward to working with you down the road. Any final thoughts before you take leave?
Yeah, if I may do one more shameless plug, if you like what you've been hearing and you'd like to sign on as a co-sponsor of the American Anti-Corruption Act, and that's in addition to the 435 project, we're also obviously trying to garner support for our legislation at the federal level. We're trying to get a million citizen co-sponsors. All you have to go to that web address I mentioned earlier, represent.us. There is a button that'll be right there under the giant enough that says click to start, and you can sign on as a co-sponsor of the act and help us fight the good fight. We'd be delighted to have you.
Okay, can I ask one favor in repayment for the last plug? We have a new caller that popped up in queue, and I was wondering if it would be okay if we took one more call.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, okay, cool. 412, I'm opening your microphone. Who do we have the pleasure of speaking with?
Hey, guys, it's Greg in Pittsburgh.
Hey, Greg Russick. Greg Russick, just so you know, man, sir, is your single biggest fan within the coffee party. And the guy who has been most excited and vocal in support of the Anti-Corruption Act. So, Greg, I knew you were landing, and I'm glad you had a chance to call in and talk to me, sir.
I just wanted to call and thank him and the rest of the organization for giving people like me an opportunity to spread the word and to try and do what we can to collect more citizen co-sponsors to make this act something that's much more visible with the people that we know and then hopefully with our legislators, because I do believe that it has all the components that are necessary, including a protection from the Supreme Court and anything that it might want to do to block the action. I just think it's a wonderful movement. I think it's right on target, and they make it so easy, so easy. Everybody that's listening, if you don't go to that represent.us page and start up your own citizen co-sponsor page, and use the tools that they have, you're really missing a golden opportunity. It takes almost no time at all. All you got to do is spread the word, and every little bit helps. So thank you, Mansoor, and thank everybody at Represent Us for the chance to feel like we're making a contribution and doing something.
Oh, well, thank you, man. I mean, this is a people's movement. It's your movement, and we couldn't do it without you. I'm the one who should be thanking you, but I appreciate the kind words.
Keep up your good work.
Thanks, Greg. Welcome home.
Thanks.
Greg Rusick. He is a man of very high energy. He gets a little frustrated sometimes with the system, but that's not a bad thing. I believe emotions can be channeled for good, and that's I don't care what they are, as long as they're channeled properly and the actions are good and civil and on the level, then I think we're in great shape. So, again, Mansoor, thank you so much for joining us and talking about the Anti-Corruption Act and Represent Us. And I look forward to working with you guys more closely in the very near future.
Me as well. It was an absolute pleasure to talk to y'all.
Phenomenal. Thanks. Have a great night.
You too. Take care.
Okay, you've been listening to Mansoor Gitvar on Press One for Democracy. This is Dan Aronson, your host, and this has been a fun hour. I hope you've all enjoyed it. We've still got some more time for open conversation. We could talk more about the Anti-Corruption Act. We could talk about debt ceiling. We can talk about whatever you want. We can kind of throw it open that way, but before we do, I just wanted to tell everybody, again, you're listening to Press One for Democracy, one of four Coffee Party radio shows that air weekly. We start every day or every Monday, Laura Simmons, at 6 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. East Coast time. That's like, right, Cincinnati? Cincinnati's East Coast, yeah. So 9 p.m. for you, Laura. We also have The Middle Ground, which airs on Tuesdays, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that is with Eric Beiler and a slew of guest hosts. Rolling out. And then we have Lunch with Loudon on Thursdays, and that's at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's Lunch with Loudon because Janine's out here in Oregon where it's noon. So Lunch with Loudon every Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then finally we have Politics Done Right with Egberto Willis, and that is at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So you do have four shows to entertain and inform, and we hope we are doing both. And speaking of which, it's time for our civics moment with John Cashin. Oops, sorry. That's a little bit of a technical glitch. Okay, it's time for our civic moments with John Cashin.
This is John Cashin with the Coffee Party USA's Civics Minute. There are many arguments proclaiming the evils of big government, and it always seems to come back to the same arguments made by the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists during the days of our founders, concerning the differences between a strong central government and a weak central government. The Second Continental College adopted the Articles of Confederation on November 15, 1777, and it was in place until 1789, but it was replaced by the Constitution, which advocated for a stronger central government. Why was it replaced? The Articles of Confederation maintained the principle that the national government would not hold more power than the states, that which they saw as sovereign. This satisfied the fears that many of the states had regarding a strong central power, as Britain was before the Declaration of Independence. In fact, there was no executive branch, because they feared giving one man that much power, and it was decided that the Congress would handle all the nation's affairs. However, there were many inherent weaknesses with the Articles of Confederation. The national government did not have the power to tax. Congress did not have the power to force states to obey its laws. Congress could not enforce laws. Each state could issue its own paper money. Any state could put tariffs on trade between other states or countries. There was no system of national courts. Congress could declare war and raise an army, but it could not force a state to give men or money. After the Revolutionary War, the country went into a deep post-war depression. The states were threatening war with each other, and there were armed uprisings and riots across the land. Things eventually got so bad that the country was on the verge of a civil war. This was called the critical period. Because each state was printing their own money, the value depreciated soon after the war, and many returning soldiers were paid in currency they considered to be worthless. There are stories that some soldiers wallpapered their house with the paper currency. On May 25, 1787, the Continental Congress convened in Philadelphia to decide the fate of the Articles of Confederation, and on September 17, 1787, a new constitution was approved, which had the much-needed, stronger central powers. Stay tuned for more Civics Minute segments as you listen to your favorite Coffee Party USA blog talk radio shows. From Paducah, Kentucky, this is John Cashin. Good day, everyone.
There's your Civics Minute for this week on the Articles of Confederation. John Cashin, member of the Board of Directors of Coffee Party USA, and historian, and an all-around brilliant guy. And I had the pleasure of spending a couple of days with him at our board retreat earlier this year, and I can tell you he is the epitome of a true Southern gentleman, and just a joy to be around and work with. And John, he's been having a few medical issues lately, so if you're listening, John, or if you're listening archived, regardless, get well soon, buddy, and stay well for us. So without further ado, I'm going to bring Bobby Rodrigo back in, because you did a little tease there, Bobby, about telling us you had a big announcement from Panda, and I certainly want to... As you know, I'm a big fan of Panda, so I thought I'd bring it back in and let you tell us the good news.
Well, it's fantastic news. The Albany, New York City Council has introduced the strongest resolution in the United States against the indefinite detention provisions of the NDAA. Resolution 80.92.13. Which is actually going to be presented formally on the 7th of October. And I have been asked by our fearless leader, Dan Johnson, to present our position live and at the Albany meeting. So I'm happy about that as well, because I'm going to be in New York, so I volunteered for it, and he asked me to do it. So I think that's fantastic. And for those who don't understand, because it's not talked about all the time, in 2011 and 2012, an overwhelming Congress, along with our president signing it, there were two provisions added to the National Defense Authorization Act, which is a yearly, basically a yearly cost of living raise and some other business that's taken care of at the military every year. Well, in 2011, Congress added an indefinite detention provision, and also along with 2012, declared the United States a war zone. So all that has to happen in order for you, me, and your grandmother to be indefinitely detained is to be declared that we are supporting terrorism. and we are definitely detained without an attorney, without due process, without any kind of probable cause hearing, and without any kind of speedy trial rights. And I say it that way because, of course, these are catchwords that are directly in the Constitution that Mr. Cashin just spoke about in our civics minute. Particularly the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Sixth and the 14th Amendments of the Constitution are directly attacked. Now, this is as bad as it gets. And Dan Johnson founded the People Against the NDAA. He's been a Coffee Party regular since it happened for over a year and a half. I know he's been on a number of shows, including mine, when I've hosted. And I'm the national event coordinator for the People Against the NDAA. I had to get involved. It's one of my core issues. And we have been fighting to get the nullification of these provisions of the NDAA throughout the country. And this also goes back to, I will say this to people who are dealing with cynicism about activism. I assure you, please be energized, because there are movements out there, both single issue and multiple issue, that are working to both restore the protection that the Constitution gives us, which really boils down to, again, money, because money is involved in all of this. And all of these things are tied together. You heard me mention some of them before. But this is a big deal for the People Against the NDAA. And as you know, the court case is being appealed to the Supreme Court that the Second Circuit reversed the wonderful district court decision in the Hedges case that was against the NDAA. But the Second Circuit did not overturn the merits. They only overturned they didn't overturn the merits. They threw the case out because they said that Hedges lacked standing to bring the suit, which is completely different. So there has been no ruling by any constitutional court other than the district court that supported the language of the NDAA. It actually threw it out and did a permanent injunction. So this is a big deal. It's in the state capital of New York, which is one of the most populous, one of the most politically involved, one of the most from the bigger money states that we have, and of course the media is there, et cetera. So this is a big deal for People Against the NDAA. And I have been asked to formally request that the National Coffee Party endorse the resolution. So there's something for
well,
the
there
board.
You go. When are you going to send it to me?
I just got it.
Excuse me,
Dan. Dan, you have had it for like 5 hours. And
I've had it for five.
I actually sent it to you by text earlier today, and then I put it on your Facebook page earlier today. I have not sent it to you via message, but actually, Egberto has it. Janine has it. Erica doesn't have it yet. I didn't get a chance because I was on. I stopped doing texting while I was listening to your show. But I even sent it to Michael Charney, who I know is not on the board anymore, of course. But I sent it to a vast amount of people. We are excited and energized. We had our conference call before your show. I invited people to tune into the show, both about the Anti-Corruption Act and about supporting Coffee Party Radio, and also talk about the NDAA, and then, of course, the 7th is 2 Mondays from now, and I'm hoping that we've already talked to Big Apple Coffee Party. Dan did, and they also had suggested to him to approach Coffee Party National to get an endorsement. I'm going to be talking to Coffee Party New York about trying to come to the hearing. Any activist groups in New York that are going to be there to please come to the meeting and support us. And that's where I'm at.
Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. Always happy to be a megaphone for any kind of worthy activist movements and actions. And, really that's what this show strives to be, is to put out information and to work and talk to like-minded groups and to see how we can coalesce into a larger faction that can get things done. And I'm not sure whether he's still on there, but let's do this one for one angry Jew. So let's make sure that everybody understands. So the NDAA was signed into law by the President of the United States, but it wasn't that he was, you know, and he, at the time, he made some comments like, well, I wasn't really, you know, for it, but I had to sign it because we had to fund the Army, because that's what it is. In general, it's the funding of the armies, of our armed services for the next year.
Mm-hmm.
So
and he
he's
said
like,
he would never
oh, you know, he went. Yeah. So here's now the timeline. The court case is appealed in New York. And it took the judge about an hour, I believe it said, I know it was less than two, to come to her decision to strike down the provision for intentional or for indefinite detention. It took her about an hour to strike that down. And then what happened is, okay, so now it's struck down. It's not constitutional. It's on billions of different reasons, right? Not to mention the one that's guaranteed in the Constitution called habeas corpus and a right to a trial and a fair and speedy trial and et cetera, all those other things that you said. And what happened next was that the White House sent lawyers to appeal the case. It was not an open hearing. The other side was not even allowed to present. And they basically said, this is necessary for the security of the country. And within, again, hours, they had a stay of the decision. And they had basically tossed the decision out. And it was a temporary stay at first, but then it eventually became an indefinite stay. So this is the president sending his lawyers to defend this provision, right, of this bill. So
okay.
So here we are calling out, if you're out there, angry Jew, or anybody
right.
else who thinks that
yeah.
this is a liberal organization or a Democrat organization, we call out wrongdoing regardless of party, regardless of race, regardless of whether you're a man or a woman. It doesn't matter. Wrong is wrong,
that's
right.
Right
is right, and that's all this show cares about, is pointing out the good when it's done, by whomever it's done, and calling out the bad and organizing against the evil when it appears. It's not a matter of partisanship. That's why we need to get everybody to adopt this transpartisan take. And really, if you think about it, all of the argument in politics is about politics. It's not really about the issues. There's so many issues we agree on, but we let this partisanship get in the way of us talking to the guy on the other side of the room. And that's what's got Congress stopped, and that's what's got this country all angry about stuff when we actually agree about a lot of things. Frustrating.
Well, you think about our elected officials, they're not working for us. That has to do with money, there's no question. They're distracting us with whatever particular thing they want to distract us with, and they all do it. You know, I would offer. You know, I'm certainly not partisan because I don't believe in parties. I don't believe that, and you've heard me say this. When I walk into a voting booth, I don't want to see a party next to anybody's name. Where did that come from in the Constitution that we had to have Democrats and Republicans, Libertarians? You know, and the thing about the party system is, and Christina Tobin, who is the, for those who don't know, is the founder of Free and Equal Elections Foundation. Pointed out to me in a discussion again, I had actually sent her a copy of the Rasmussen report recently talking about how this is a good time for another. I sent it to you as well. Greg Russick sent it to both of us, actually. And so I have to credit Greg with the beginning of the discussion. So I'm reading it and I'm like, oh, this is wonderful because it's showing, he's pointing out to me, knowing how I feel about this, that only 38% on each party is, you know, there's a big window. There's another 32% that don't want anything. So his point to me was that this is a good chance for a third party to come in on the basis of polling. Me not staying focused, I sent it to Christina saying, hey, look, the window's open. And she goes back and goes, no, we don't want any parties. And she's absolutely right, because where did that come from? And she said in her involvement, direct involvement with parties, and she mentioned the Green Party, for example, and the Libertarian Party is another example of it. When you see parties develop, then within the party themselves, you deal with control and corruption instead of freedom to have valued candidates free to present their position and let the people decide.
Well, wait a second.
Right.
Hold on, because let's discuss this for a second, because I don't agree with that assessment in the least.
Hmm.
If we don't have any parties, then the logical end to that statement has to be true democracy, right? Why even have
exactly.
a representative at all, right? Why not just have one man, one vote? We'll set it up on the internet. We'll put the necessary security in place, and we'll have
Thank
one man,
you.
One vote. So that I don't think that's practical. I think people have to have.
But it is practical, Dan. Think about it. First of all, where did the parties come from?
Slow down, Jeff. Are you saying the one man, one vote thing isn't practical?
Yeah, it is practical. We want to put voting on the phone. I mean, we want to make voting so accessible to the public that, I mean, we put money on the phone. So certainly if we can protect money on the phone, we can protect votes. It is ridiculous to think that we can't.
I'm not questioning it from security. Here's what I'm suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
If people mm-hmm. can't take the time to vote once every 2 years, then are you really talking about having votes daily? I mean, weekly, monthly? Help me understand the mechanics of this.
What does that have to do with – what is when you vote have to do with parties? It has nothing to
do with
parties.
Hold on. Relax.
Okay,
what I'm saying is if you, the one – okay, so you're saying one man, one vote, but only when it comes to representatives? Or are you saying we're going to do away with Congress and all together and we're going to vote – everybody's going to have a vote on every – No, I'm just trying to get there. I'm just trying to figure out where you're taking me.
No. I'm talking about candidates being allowed to run when there are elections, whenever they are, without having the restrictions of a party to join or to be, you know, we invited President Obama and Governor Romney to the free and equal elections debate. We couldn't go to theirs, or actually not us, but the other presidential candidates couldn't go to theirs because it was owned by a corporation. What is the purpose of the conventions, the Democratic and the Republican? But what is that about? All that is about is to continue the control and lockdown of the system. And so, how they treated Ron Paul, for example, at the GOP convention last year was not just Ron Paul, but Ron Paul's delegate. Was absurd and actually criminal, and it actually broke the so-called laws that the GOP convention even made for itself. We don't need to have a party to vote for somebody. If I want to run for office, I shouldn't have to be on the Democratic ticket or on the Republican ticket or anybody's ticket. All I need is the votes, and I'm talking about when the elections happen. I'm not saying let's have votes every day. I'm saying let's keep the elections right where they are and open the door to anybody, as well as removing the money from the candidacy. Let the people decide who they want, how do you say the guy's name was the head of the GOP?
Rance Priebus. I don't know.
Why does he get to decide?
Bobby, take a breath. Hang on. To get on the ballot, any ballot is, well, okay, as far as I am aware, because it does vary state to state, but my understanding of it is it just takes X number of signatures. Now, you don't
have
to have a party to collect signatures. People run as independents
You have to have a party to participate because they don't let you participate.
That's not true. If you get the signatures, your name goes on the ballot.
That is true. When's the last time somebody else participated in a presidential debate besides the two parties? That would be
my friend the billionaire.
Ross Perot.
Okay, not my friend Ross Perot. But before that,
there was
also Anderson from Illinois.
Before he was on the independent. But I'm talking about since then.
Now we're back to talking about money. Perot got to be at the seat at the table because he had the money to build the machine to get him there.
He should not have to. You've talked to the gentleman that ran for office here in Atlanta, Patrick Thompson.
Yep.
That's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. The media, who's also in bed with this whole thing, didn't even pay attention to him because he didn't have any money. What is he? He doesn't need money. He needs votes. You know, the money thing, as I mentioned, is absolutely involved in this. But the two-party system has locked us out. If they can run Washington as a two-party system and not pay attention, you guys mentioned earlier the polling, for example. Like they were talking about 90% of the people said that they should have background checks and guns. Well, how about the polling of people like for Syria? It should have never even been on the table. If you're going to listen to the people in this country, if you're going to listen to your constituents, you're supposed to take the stance that your constituents have, not that the money has. Period. That's how this is supposed to work. We put you there, you have to listen to us. You point out that 81 million people didn't vote.
We are in total agreement. But that's it. So we talked about it long enough, and guess what? It always comes back to the money. And the party is simply a conduit, or I guess a gathering place for that money. But then again, if we can't get the money out of politics, there should be a window of opportunity right now where somebody says, my $5,000 doesn't buy me what it used to at the Democratic and Republican parties tables anymore. Maybe I should look for a third party who's looking for money. I don't know.
Looking at it from that, let's look at it from that perspective for a moment, because it really highlights how ridiculous our duopoly is. If you do that, okay, and regardless of what the percentage is, then why isn't Rafi Anderson on the dais? Or why wasn't Ralph Nader? Christina Tobin had Ralph Nader put on 45 state ballots.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So why wasn't Ralph Nader in the debate when he was running? Okay, what? Because they locked him out. Why? Who gives them the right to lock out a choice of mine to vote? No, it doesn't. It's not, certainly not in the Constitution, which is the only document we're supposed to be going by when it comes to this. So you make my point another way.
Yes, right. And now we're talking about not only money corrupting the political system, but the fact that they've now bought they bought the media, right? My wife stepped out. She read me a beautiful thing. It was in the Oregonian Sunday, and it talked about six corporations owning thousands of media outlets and print outlets,
right,
and broadcast outlets. It is now the media has now basically been bought up by six companies. Six companies own and run and drive the media. So they now control the conversation, and they control the access to the conversation. So I guess, you know what,
exactly.
I guess we really don't have a choice. I guess the only answer is to get the money out. So I think it's a good way.
We don't. Other than we accept it.
Yeah. Well, right. Exactly. Exactly.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna. I was reading Chajman posting stuff here, talking about each candidate. I just wanted to bring him into the conversation because I know he's always on chat.
Mm-hmm.
The world among the world's greatest, among the United States has by far the worst ballot access situation. Each state writes its own ballot access laws, even for federal office. Sometimes these laws are clearly and irrationally written to force one or two party denominations. Yeah, there's no doubt about it, Chad. Yes, right. Well, it's the same thing. It's gerrymandering as well, right? So. If you control the process and you get to determine what the process is, then certainly you have the ability to slant the process your way and write it in a manner favorable to you. And that's where the cycle of corruption begins, when you have the power to rig the game, and you rig the game in somebody else's favor, and then that person pays you to do it, and now you're beholden to them, and so now you keep rigging the game in their favor. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah, and the revolving door continues, as everybody keeps saying. You know, it is an amazing thing that we've allowed to develop to the level that it is. And with the media so in bed with it, you know, that's where the cynicism comes from, is that we don't even have honest journalism beating this down anymore. I was having a discussion the other day about, Dan was talking earlier on our conference call, Dan Johnson, about he has, you know, he's going to be interviewed by Ben Swan, and I, there are a list of people out there, Amber Lyon, Dan, you know, Ben Swan, Abby Martin, who are outside of the mainstream media, and they don't care what they say. I have conversations with people about it, and they say, well, you know, they're always saying something bad about America or something like that. Well, they're being honest. I don't really care. I'll figure out how I feel about it. I just don't want anybody's opinion. I want to know what's going on. You know, we can't even, you know, CNN can't even report a shooting right anymore. I mean, the fiasco of the Navy Yard, oh, my God, what are they saying? You know, and you get nothing when it comes to the amount of facts. And I was so happy to see, and you can hear the sarcasm dripping from my voice. I was so happy.
Yeah, and they were equally wonderful in reporting when the Affordable Care Act, the decision came down from the Supreme Court. And all of them are going, it's not allowed. It's unconstitutional. Wait. More.
Hey, wait for it. Well, the thing that I was just so happy to see that they brought back Crossfire. Oh, you just don't know how tickled I am to see that, because now I get to go back and find the Jon Stewart YouTube when he appeared on the old Crossfire and handed those two guys their hat, because he was just making a mockery of them because they had to have a comedian on to talk about politics and about how they create the division. That's how long this has been going on. And I, you know, I'm so happy I haven't developed Alzheimer's or Alzheimer's yet, and I can remember this stuff, because I'm like, and so I happen to, I like Dr. West, because he's to me, he's honest. Regardless of his ideology, he's honest. So I happened to be browsing through, and I saw that he was on Crossfire tonight, and I wanted to strangle him. because all that is, him and who is the guy, the guy from the right. And then they have Van Jones and Newt Gingrich and S.C. Cup, who I actually like, and Stephanie Cutter. Stephanie Cutter. Now, this is who we have creating a division now on CNN. This is the debate. I mean,
let's not give them any more airtime to promote them.
Thank you.
Greg, I see your hand still up. I'm not sure if you're still wanting to chat or if you're driving. I don't want you to kill yourself. I'm going to open your mic just in case. And if you say, nope, can't talk, that's fine. But I'm glad I've opened your mic, Greg.
S.E. Cup? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Come on.
Stop.
I've been listening intently. It's great conversation, of course. Yeah, I'm capable of driving and with the hands free and not killing myself. So let me I'll share a couple of thoughts with you. I think I sent this around to you guys actually just this weekend on the media. Did an excellent piece on why the news media is so horrible today. We actually are partially responsible for that. We, meaning collectively, we as citizens.
Yeah.
We don't seem to have the patience, and the news media doesn't seem to have the patience to actually wait for facts to be known. They will cite each other and anonymous sources in order just to be the first to say something, as long as it's something that no one else has said. And then we regurgitate it, spread it around on social media, and then scratch our heads and wonder why, you know, CNN can't get their shit together. There are facts together, sorry. No one else can either, because, I think a lot of times we're eager to blame systems a lot, and we won't take accountability and responsibility as people, and I think we're part of the problem, we meaning the collective we in America. In a 24/7 news cycle, If you're not breaking news every few minutes and someone else is, you're losing that eyeball and that advertising revenue to somebody else. We just have grown completely impatient, it seems, and incapable of actually waiting for a news story like, the Affordable Care Act or the shooting in the Navy Yard to be developed and be known. I was listening to the radio that day, and they had reporters on the scene asking what had changed, like every 10 minutes. I don't know what you expected to change. The same thing is going on with the ball that's been taken over in Ethiopia. I mean, I don't know what's happened since I was on meetings and everything all day today, but you know, they've got reporters on the scene for the last 3 days outside of a mall and wanting to know what's happening. But
yeah, and it's always that same awkward. It's always that same awkward. Okay, this is how we're going live on site. Okay, what's that? Well, the guy's still in there and he's got the hostages and that's it. Back to you. And yeah, and you get that every 10 minutes. I was flying back the other day from Chicago, and I was watching because I don't own cable television. I don't have it. I will not watch mainstream media news. I like Time. I read Time because it's got information behind it. You know, it's not that, you know, USA Today, three paragraphs and you're out kind of thing. So my wife, I give all credit to my wife. She got me reading Time. I love it. But I'm watching. It's when they were having the heavy rains in Colorado first started, and I'm watching the scene of a guy whose the road had been washed out and his pickup truck had flipped over, and it's sitting there. And now they're showing, like, so a rescue boat trying to get the guy out. And I swear that coverage went on for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
They have too much time to fill.
Right.
There's too
right.
much time to fill if you're running 24/7.
Yeah, exactly right. I don't actually mind the fact that we live in the information age. In fact, I'm thrilled by it. I just think that as individuals, we all need to understand, I think, at least a little bit better, how information actually gets to us, and the fact that things don't happen on a script and in a storyline the way we might see it on television or in the movie. And for us to think that, you know, we've got to have a blow-by-blow, minute-by-minute accounting of a hostage standoff, and that doesn't lead to speculation, and that doesn't lead to false reports, and that doesn't lead to misquotes and just, you know, outright storytelling. Well, we're really not thinking very clearly as intelligent individuals and adults if we don't think that's what's happening. It takes time for these things to sort themselves out. And I guess that was all I really had to add to the conversation when it came to the media.
Well, it's good. And Bobby is absolutely right. We have to take responsibility because in the end, we are consumers. And we are the ones with the money. And if we stop watching and we just turn my father used to call it the boob tube. He said, turn
That's
the boob
right.
tube
yeah.
off.
Yeah.
He said, just turn it off. You know, if we all quit consuming it, then the money goes away, the sponsors go away. You know, so it's the same thing all over again. We have the power to do it, but how do we coalesce into a group that en masse goes click and turns it off?
So Dan, I think I might have a little bit of an answer for you. I wasn't able to stay on Egberto's show for the whole thing on Saturday because I had company arrive, and so I went back and listened to it later. And your excitement in your voice about how citizen media is getting the attention of mainstream media and you know, trying to be dismissed and poo-pooed was exciting. You were clearly excited about the fact that this sort of information exchange, whether it's on Blog Talk Radio or on the Facebook, Coffee Party Facebook page or on the Coffee Party website, things you're doing and getting together would represent us. Enough of that will work if we just keep after it and keep at it. I'm convinced of that, that at some point in the not-too-distant future, we're going to look back on news sources like Fox, like MSNBC, like NBC, CBS, and ABC and say, you know what, that stuff was entertaining, but it wasn't very informative. And now we're a lot smarter about information and facts. I think we will look back on this period in time and say those kinds of things. I hope sooner rather than later, but I believe we will.
I offer this to you guys. I mentioned last week that I was involved, and you may have heard this Saturday too, because I know you both were on with me on Saturday. I was involved. We had Georgia Activists, another organization I'm with. We had brought Jeffrey Smith here to Atlanta, who was the producer of Genetic Roulette. This is a Monsanto GMO issue.
Yeah.
So one of the things, you know, we brought him to the Morehouse School of Medicine. We on and I filmed it. You guys will see more stuff on that lately. I know Greg, we interact on Facebook a lot. You might have seen some stuff about it.
Yeah.
So anyway, one of the things that struck me about what he said was when he was given the colloquy about how the GMO labeling started and what the European response to it was, and really the two things that we have going to us, we're saying the same thing here about the media. Really, the reason that Europe was able to stop it, because there was a possibility there that around 2004 that GMO would have pretty much run the world, and Europe pretty much put the brakes on it. And what they did really is the consumers said, we're not buying it, and now it isn't there. So one of the things he said that struck me, which is exactly what we're talking about here and what you guys just mentioned, is as far as Monsanto goes, you know, we go after the legislation. You know, we're introducing legislation in January here in Georgia for GMO labeling. They've got the 522 Act in Washington. Well, the other thing we do is that we just stop buying the GMO food, the stuff that's not labeled. And then the businesses themselves are going to say, okay, well, you know what? You're going to have to start selling me stuff that is non-GMO so we can get our sales back up. And it would work. And I struck that as, you know, I'm like, gosh, if we just would think more simply, that the solutions are there in front of us. We sometimes complicate it because of the crap that we hear every single day. And if we could just get by the muck and mire, a lot of this boils down to simple choices. Well, we're just not going to buy the stuff that has GMOs in it. Too bad. Bye. And they're going to want their market share back, and they're going to change what they sell.
Well, the model as it's set up today, when you look at where mainstream media gets its money, and that comes from advertisement, and that advertisement is threatened if too much news or attention is paid to the health effects of GMO, or even just concerns that people maybe ought to have, just information that Americans would benefit from. And I can tell you guys with absolute certainty, because I spent a little time in this industry in advertising, I will tell you those conversations without doubt happen. Large advertisers make it very clear to the media outlets that they buy time from when they are unhappy about things that media outlet is doing. Don't fool yourselves for a second. This is not something out of some TV show or a movie. Those conversations happen. I've been in rooms when they've occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And so long as the large agri-conglomerates and food manufacturers continue to pump out crap that they want us to buy because they can make it really cheap, they can sell it to us at an affordable price, their margins are high, and they're paying for the airtime that we have to suffer through on mainstream media. The recourse is only going to be through something on a grassroots level where citizens finally say, you know what, I did find out about how dangerous this crap can be to me, and I'm not buying it anymore. And enough of us stop buying it, and sooner or later, these companies aren't, they are obviously not stupid either. They sell us whatever it is that we'll buy. And
exactly.
Unfortunately, you know, America is built on, you know, this notion of cheaper is always better. I always need to get a lower price. And we even think that way about our food. That's just, to me, that's an absolute mystery. That the cheaper my food is, the more I like it. Wow, you got that so backwards.
Yeah.
So,
So, you know, there's Cameron Kruger, who's one of the members of the one of the board members of Coffee Party, and he's an entrepreneur. He started many businesses. He's an amazing kid, and I call him a kid. I think he's 36 because, well, that's a kid to me. But
that's a kid.
His idea is that we start nonprofit, like almost like cooperatives, to compete against the megacorps, and he said, if you want to see consumer activism accelerated, do it at a corporate level. So he said, for instance, in this case, what he would said is he would go out and look for money to fund a grocery store, a chain of grocery stores that would only sell labeled goods, and
right.
Say, hey, here's the alternative. You want to see Kroger? And by the way, I haven't looked in a while, but Kroger as a corporation is like the 42nd largest corporation in America.
That's correct.
All of the food distribution in this country is concentrated into a single company, and it's the 42nd biggest one in America. So you want to see Kroger start demanding GMO labeling, set up a store next to it, and say, we label, and you can come in here and be sure that if you don't want GMOs, you don't have to have them.
You know, Dan, Cisco is, last I looked at this, it's probably been a year, is the largest company in the world. Cisco's a food distributor. They surpassed Exxon and McDonald's.
S-Y-S-C-O? S-Y-S-C-O. Yeah, not – and I say that because I'm in the telecommunications space, and I don't want my buddies at Cisco, C-I-S-C-O, Cisco Systems, thinking we're talking about
that.
No,
not that's right. the food distributor. And that's a perfect example again. Chipotle – the national chain of restaurants, Chipotle, went non-GMO. So there's a customer of Cisco that is now going to demand from its distributors to bring non-GMO food to their doorway. And that's a national franchise. So again, it is a simple solution to beat these people up. I mean, you know, the Monsanto thing, if there isn't a greater example of, and here goes back to the gentleman, the one angry Jew gentleman that called about partisan stuff. If there isn't an example of a bipartisan or a two-party corruption, Monsanto is it. And I give you the facts real quick. Michael Taylor worked for Monsanto. Bush 41, a Republican, put him on the FDAA. While he was on the FDAA under Bush 41, with the new science of GMO, now this is new science, they said it's okay, we don't even have to inspect it. That's how evil this is. Who does President Obama, the Democrat, appoint as the food czar? Michael Taylor. And if I was Greg, I would say a curse word there. So...
Which curse word would you like me to use?
Pick one. They all will work.
Here, I'll do it for you. Michael Beep Taylor.
Yeah. I mean, so here's an example of how the money and the corruption transcend the absurd belief that that there is corruption only on one side. And Greg has heard me talk to him directly about this, and we all talked about this Saturday, on how it is beyond one party, especially when it comes to the money aspect of it. You know, the one angry Jew guy was absolutely right when he mentioned George Soros, 100%. Warren Buffett is another one. They have the ear of a party. Now, sometimes, as I mentioned, the partisan stuff, I mean, the factual stuff tends to be partisan. Greg raises many points. We both, Dan, you and I, raise points that are truly partisan. There are some psychopaths out there in our Congress. But I think that it's so corrupt that's why when they say, like, for example, Democrats don't have any balls, I just think they do it because that's the plan. I think that they have a plan. Just like I think that when they vote on something, there are, let's say, for example, they're going to vote on guns, and let's say they were going to pass it. By 70-30 vote in the Senate. Let's just say that. I believe that they have discussions like, well, you know, it would benefit me if I didn't vote for this, even though we want it to pass, because it'll help me with my own elections. because we all know that all they do while they're in there is to work on getting reelected. So I totally believe that there are strategy sessions in these votes that allow for people to vote opposite even what the party wants them to vote, because they're trying to keep this majority the way it is, the setup the way it is. You know, because if I can think of it, they can certainly can think of it. You know, so it's amazing. And Monsanto gives a perfect picture of this. You know, and I totally suggest everybody watch Genetic Roulette. On Bill Maher on Friday night, David Frum was on. And you know, he's a Republican guy, strategist, whatever. And he argued for GMO. And Maher had a guy on who had made a movie called GMO, Oh My God, OMG. And I think he was the director of the movie. Well, you know what? The director of the movie was the wrong guy to have on there because he didn't know what he was talking about. And I was furious with the show because Fromm is getting away with talking about a subject, and he's lying through his teeth. Totally. And here we are, you know, here, if you're a progressive and you like Maher, then you're just being told, oh, maybe it's not so bad. Because they're just selling it down the road. It's amazing.
Yep. Well, gents, I'm going to do a little wrap-up here before the end of the show. I appreciate, as always, your participation. Greg, again, welcome home. Glad you got home safe, and I'm glad you got a chance to put your plug in. My Mansoor was obviously very happy that you got that plug in and that you're ecstatic.
Good.
And involved.
Great. Glad to do it.
All right. So with that, we're going to bring to close another episode of Press One for Democracy. This has been your host, Dan Aronson. We are here every Monday night at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then that follows on Tuesdays by the Middle Ground, 8 p.m. start time, Eastern Standard Time. We have Lunch with Loudon on Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then finally, we have Egberto Willis with Politics Done Right starting every Saturday afternoon at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That is your Coffee Party Radio lineup. Please visit us if you like what we're doing at www.coffeepartyusa.com and click on the Become a Member. Or if you're already a member and you feel we're doing an extra good job, you can always make a donation, a one-time donation. Or you can become a recurring you can make a recurring donation, a sustaining membership where we'll just go ahead and bill you once a month. So whatever it is, you know, the most important thing is that Coffee Party is here for you. We are here to give you a voice in the process, which is something that corporations don't want you to do. So we, again, would like to thank Mansoor for coming on and talking about the Anti-Corruption Act. Again, go to www.anticorruption.org and you can find out all about the act. And it's a great thing that's going on, and it's a great movement that we're happy as Coffee Party to be involved with, and looking to get even tighter ties with them and with that organization and represent us. So again, Dan Aronson, signing off for Coffee Party Radio, and as an homage to my good friend Janine, I will simply say, Coffee Party on.